Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, November 9th, 2013. This is episode 1029. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and unfiltered, for 20% off your new account for life. Go to proxpn.com/twit and use our code TG20. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk about computers. Ooh. Used to be that I could end the sentence there. And then we got the internet. I was thinking the other day, we spent a lot of time in the mid-90s. Believe it or not, I've been doing this show since 1991, which makes it, what, 23 years? 22 years? 23, something like that. And back in the old days, back in Windows 3.11 days, DOS 3.3 days, we didn't have this thing called the internet. In fact, Bill Gates, Microsoft's president and CEO at the time, thought, the internet, it's a passing fad. It wasn't until 1995 he wrote a very famous memo. He said, you know, this internet, I think it's going somewhere. Quick! Man the battle stations. But back in the early 90s, we weren't sure, but we spent a lot of time talking about how to get on the internet. I remember going to the first internet, what was it called? Fair? Internet Expo, something like that.
Symposium.
Yeah, and there weren't that. It was like 300 people there, and there were about 10 booths. One of them was something called the Internet in a Box. And it was a big box, by the way. It had everything you needed to get on the internet. I presume a modem, but also the software you needed at the time, like Winsock or Slurp or Tia. We talked a lot about how to use Tia to take a text-based, because people were online, text-based online account, and turn it into a slip account that would allow you to use Mosaic. Does any of this ring a bell? Mosaic, which was the first graphical browser to get onto the internet. Oh, man.
Wow.
Times have changed. We don't, pretty much everybody born since then just says, well, what do you mean? You just get out, you press a button and your thing's on the internet. Everything's on the internet, isn't it? The internet is everywhere. Man, in those days, the idea that you might be able to carry in your pocket something the size of a deck of cards that would give you access to all the world's knowledge, communicate with a billion, maybe 2 billion people now, instantaneously was science fiction. And here we are. Only 23 years later.
I feel like I want you to do old grandpa voice.
And then I used to have the way you'd get on the internet, you'd have your phone. I should have brought my phone in. I have a Western Electric phone with a dial. And the handset. We might have had touch tone by then. But what you would do is you'd have these rubber suction cups on this device. It was called a modem. And you would take the phone and you would call the internet service provider with your hands by hand and listen. And it would go. And then when it was doing that, you'd jam it down on the cups. It was called an acoustic coupler. And the cups would be listening and speaking to the phone. And that's what a modem did in those days. And a modem would take the digital stuff and turn it into squeaks and squawks.
That is so crazy.
Remember that?
No, barely. You know, barely. I'm like, you're making this up.
And you would put that it on the happen. Suction cups. And if you were lucky, it would handshake. And it would get quiet when it handshook because it just turned off. But it was still going. If you watch War Games, somebody in Greg in the chat room says, if you watch War Games, Matthew Broderick, that's what he uses to first start talking to Whopper. He has the acoustic coupler, the whole thing.
Oh, my God. Remember that movie, The Net, with Sandra Bullock?
I managed to avoid that one. Sneakers and hackers. I get angry when I watch movies that are about technology. I get really angry. You know, there's a profession in Hollywood for people who design the user interface for computer screens for movies, because you wouldn't show a, I guess now,
oh, right.
Now you could show a computer screen in movies. In fact, was it Pacific Rim? Was one of these movies I just saw. They actually saw some pretty sophisticated real computer screens. They were using a hacker program called Nmap, and it was real. To hack the computer. But in those days, you had to have, first of all, the letters had to be really big or you couldn't read them on the screen. So there were people who designed user interfaces just for the movies.
Wow.
And it would always get me angry because I'd look at it.
And then they always say something silly like, they've hacked into the mainframe.
Yeah, they've hacked into the mainframe.
We have to hack into the mainframe.
And it was always, you know, really easy. Oh, no problem. You just type these. Well, we know that now. You know, this brings us right up to the present where Adobe... got hacked. The Adobe password database has now reached out into the real world, and it was not just, you know, a few million. It was a 10 gigabyte database of logins, of passwords. 1.9 million people. Wait a minute. No, it was more than that. It was like 20 or 30 million. It was a huge number. I'm sorry. Whoops. I underestimated a little bit. 150 million people. See, the problem is Adobe originally, a week ago, said, 2.9 million people. Then the database got out. And it turns out it was 150 million records. 150 million people. Now, Adobe said, well, we've encrypted the passwords, but a clever hacker figured it out. For one thing, they didn't encrypt the password. Hint. Now, and by the way, the reason this is serious is because many of these accounts have credit cards, and people are purchasing Adobe software through them. So, and the credit card database leaked it. And now Adobe said everything was encrypted except for the password hint. So, clever folk said, "Well, look at the password hints. In many cases, do you do this? The password hint says something like, my password is." And there's a password. Or so, folks, the hint is not supposed to include the password. In the cases where it did, people were able to then look at the encrypted result and go backwards and figure out what the passwords were for people. And people who used common passwords were immediately figured out. You know what the most common password was? The number one password used by 1.9 million people. The password was, what do you think?
Can I guess?
Yeah.
Dog's name.
No, bet worse than that. 123456.
No.
Yeah. 1.9 million people used that. 446,000 people used 123456789. That's more secure. There's nine digits.
It's very sophisticated.
Number three. What do you think the number third most used password by, this is better than Family Feud, by 345,834 people used the password?
Birthday.
Password.
What?
Password. If we weren't on the radio, I'd tell you what one hint was. It was very funny, but I can't because it's kind of profane. 211,650 rhymes with, and then there was another word. You can just take the P off password. That's what it said. Rhymes with. That was the hint. What could that mean? Rhymes with. The number four was Adobe 123. Number five was 123456789. These are passwords used by real people in the millions. QWERTY was another big one. 123456789 was another one. Here's a popular one. Ever used 111111? Now, remember, this is an Adobe site, so the number nine top password was Photoshop. Not even like mix of upper lowercase or using a zero for the O, nothing like that. Then 123123, then 123456789 0. It goes on and on and on. Really the worst. I love you is number 18 in the list. So these people have all been compromised. And worse, I bet you a lot of these people used this password for other sites too, right? So it makes it really risky. Sunshine was 23. Let me in was number 25. Yeah. I don't know the password, so let me in. Oh, that works. Yeah, like open sesame. Yeah. Number 26, my favorite password of all time, monkey. I don't know why people like monkey so much.
It's a great word. And a great animal.
Change your password if you're on Adobe.com. Leo Laporte, and make it better than that one. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This seems so hip way back in the... Now it just seems like cartoon characters. Remember they wore potted planters on their head and nuclear scientist... We're talking about Devo, nuclear waste uniforms. And
I think it's and they still moved like robots. Extremely hip.
No.
Yes.
No, now it just feels... That's the problem with hip. Hip becomes...
It moves on.
Yeah. So if you were
silly now.
If you were hip in the 70s, you had a big wide tie and long sideburns, and then you would just look silly now. Devo.
Or ironically awesome.
Yeah.
Everybody's wearing 70s hair, right?
All I know is when Tech TV launched, when they launched the network, the cable network that I've made my bones on, that's a mafia phrase for having killed my first person, but it doesn't really apply here. But, you know, I got into television successfully for the first time. I'd done it for years, but it was 1998. In our opening party, we hired Devo, and even then, it seemed kind of retro.
I would go see Devo
15 years ago. Yeah.
Anyway. When do I get whacked?
Irvine tech attorney says that Devo rearranged how we thought about music. Our kids think new wave is not so new, but it was at the time. A strip down of music plus synthesizers. Think cars. I prefer not to. So who should I... no, I'm just kidding. I love Devo. Crack that whip. Did cars precede Devo or did they come after Devo, the cars?
The cars?
Rick Ocasek's.
Oh, God, way before.
Way before.
Yeah.
So really, Devo wasn't that innovative. Because that's like the Cars. They sound the same. He even sings like this. All right.
Okay, Cars didn't have any outfits.
Let's not get in a fight over this. The Cars didn't have outfits. You're right. They didn't wear planters on their head.
And they're horrible live. Anyway, let's talk to James in L.A.
Really?
Yeah, they're not good.
Oh. See, the problem is that... that's Heather Hummond, by the way, the phone ranger. And she's really into music, so I should never bring up music, because then... We'll never get. What did you say, James, on line three?
Is that exactly.
What you said? That you said that? That's what mm-hmm. you said? Mm-hmm. Hello, James, on line three, calling from Los Angeles. Hi, James.
Hi, thank you. Oh, you guys are cracking me up.
We're silly today. I don't know why. Sometimes a show takes a little while to get going.
And thanks for finally. Now I know what made my bones means. I've heard that before.
Yeah, I learned it. Look, it's not like I'm an expert on the mafia. I saw it on The Sopranos once. That's all.
Yeah. Right. So my question is, I have XP and I have an old Acer. I replaced the hard drive about 5 years ago, and I know we have to upgrade from XP next year, like March or April.
March is what we call end of life for XP, okay. And that means Microsoft says, that's it. We're not going to support it anymore, so you better upgrade.
So is that like March 31st?
You know, there's an actual date. I don't know what it is. I don't pay that much attention to it.
So my question is should I go for a deal now on a laptop and try to get 7, and if I can't settle for 8, or should I hold out and wait for the whatever? Because I know you said Microsoft is coming out with something to replace 8.
They did. It's called 8.1. And it's somewhat of an improvement, and that's the last one you're going to get at least until 2015. That's the latest gossip. Nobody knows, but Mary Jo Foley, who does our Windows Weekly show, is an expert on this stuff, and her sources, who are very good, she really knows what's going on, say the next version of Windows will not appear in 2014. It'll be 2015, and it's going to be more down this tablet road. So I have mixed feelings about that. I'll give you the whole story. Microsoft recognized some years ago that the world was moving away from desktop computing towards tablets, right? They were very worried about the iPad. Now, I got to point out, the iPad, in its entire three-year existence, has only sold 170 million units. That's how many Windows PCs were sold in the last 6 months. So while people say, oh, here come the iPads, people still buy computers. Nevertheless, Microsoft decided that the time was running out for desktop PCs. We were moving to what everybody calls a post-PC world. And so they decided that Windows should reflect that by becoming tabletized. And what they wanted was a single version of Windows that would work across all platforms, would work well as a desktop computer, it would work well as a phone, and work well as a tablet. They have come up with a unified interface, but unfortunately there are three different versions of Windows that are completely incompatible. There's Windows Phone 8, Windows RT, which they don't call RT anymore, but we'll have to because there's no other word for it, and Windows Pro, which is, these are all Windows 8.1 devices. They all look the same. They have the tiles on the front. They offer full screen applications. And in some cases, the case of Windows RT and Windows Pro, they also offer a desktop, traditional Windows 7 style desktop. And that's where I think Microsoft, I can't say went wrong, because I think that in the long run, this perhaps is something they had to do. But what we're looking at with Windows 8 and Windows 8.1 is an operating system in an awkward adolescence. Mm-hmm. It is betwixt and between. It's neither the old desktop operating system nor the new tablet operating system. It's a little bit of each, which makes for, I think, user confusion. For instance, there's two browsers. There's a tablet browser and a desktop browser. They're both Internet Explorer. They both use the same engine underneath, but they don't have the same capabilities. They don't even have the same user interface. So it's very, I think, confusing for people. It's confusing for me. I don't know when I launch the browser which browser I'm going to get. And is the address bar at the top or is it the bottom? Can I use flat? I mean, all of this is confusing. There's three different places control panel settings go. And you have to kind of know which control panel to use and on and on and on. So this is why I've told people, if you could stay with Windows 7, at least you're going to have a consistent user experience. It isn't the future of Windows by any means. And here we are a year into Windows 8. Maybe it's time to say, well, I'm just going to have to live with this awkward adolescent because, as we all know, the teenage years, well, unpleasant, go on and on and on. So that's my opinion at this point is you probably should get Windows 8. There are enough user interface improvements from people like Stardock. There's Classic Shell that will make it be more of a desktop, will kind of hide the tablet stuff. So I think the future is Windows 8, and you might as well just bite the bullet. So, yes, if you're using Windows XP, I think Windows 7 is the best version of Windows to date. However, we're a year into the Windows 8 regime, and it's going to be longer. You might as well just go to Windows 8.1.
Really?
Bite the bullet. There, if you really want to get rid of the – if you want to have a you can boot right into desktop, so you never see tablet. You can use something like Start 8, Start and the word 8, which is from $5 from Stardock. There are other free ones like Classic Shell. They all do the same thing. They give you a traditional Windows Start menu on the desktop. Mm-hmm. You could pretend – even though it will every once in a while pop into your existence, pretend that that tablet stuff doesn't exist. Kind of work in the desktop.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, I guess we're all going to be tablet. I don't know. I mean, this is a big debate even among, everybody else, Mac users, even Linux users, is what does the future of computing look like? There's certainly a lot of times where a tablet or even a smartphone, I use a smartphone more than any other computer right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. You like XP and the XP interface is starting to disappear, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, we used Windows 7 at work, and it just, you know, I don't really notice any difference between XP and 7.
No.
But I've heard what you said about 8, and so that's my...
There are improvements. 8 is more, it's probably more secure. It certainly will last longer and far in turn those terms, no, the end of life and so forth. But it's things like file copy have been much improved. Some internals have been very much improved on Windows 8.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's not a complete Edsel, then it's just kind of different.
Right, and if you use something like Classic Shell or Start 8, you'll be pretty much, except for this, you know, the control panels, they're still there and stuff like that. I think you can get used to it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, there he is, our home theater guru, Scott Wilkinson, editor-in-chief at the AVS Forum and host of our Home Theater Geeks podcast at twit.tv. Hello, Home Theater Geek. You home theater geek, you.
I am a home theater geek, yes, indeed.
So Scott talks about big screen TVs, but he also talks about music and sound and speakers.
Yep.
It is, I have to say, I have installed now, you know, we just bought a new house, and it's a big house with lots of rooms, and I put Sonos everywhere.
Ah, and I very
just,
good.
As expensive as Sonos is, I just feel it like is. It's the best solution for whole house audio.
I think you're right. It's certainly one of the best. I can't think of one better.
They now have for one thing, it's you set it up with Wi-Fi, but it has its own network,
right?
And that solves a big problem with wireless whole house stereo, which is latency, where one room is a little ahead of the other room, and it just sounds echoey. So I put the same music loud on every speaker in the house, and the whole house, it's in sync. I don't know how they do it. And it wasn't in sync. It was in,
yeah,
you know
good.
What I'm saying. No boy bands.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
It's right. Amazing what they do. And they have a new one, the Play One, I think it's called. It's inexpensive. It's $1.99. It doesn't sound as good as the 3 and the 5. The 5 sound is what I use mostly. But I put Play Ones in like the bathroom and the laundry room. And those are big sounds. And they sound really good.
We should mention that what those are speakers, basically, with amplifiers that you can just place anywhere.
You just plug them in, and then they get on the network.
Yeah, they have to have AC power, but you don't need to plug in any audio or anything. They just get the audio from, what's the base station called? I've forgotten.
The bridge. You can have, any bridge. One of them can be a bridge or a connect.
Right.
So they have a variety of devices. Now, the other thing they have, and I really want you to review this sometime.
Okay.
So they have a sound bar, which we have. And then if you really want that, which is very expensive. I think the sound bar is, $700, something like that.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, it's kind of outrageous.
Yeah.
In fact, all of Sonos is. I feel always guilty.
They're always very expensive. That's true.
But there's nothing that works the same way, and that's why I end up getting it.
Yep.
And the quality is good. But the sound bar, if you want to make it a full home theater system, you can buy a very expensive subwoofer. Mm-hmm. And then you can use the Play Ones as surrounds, and it will in the software you can say these are the surround speakers, this is the sub, this is the sound bar, and I think you're going to get some very nice wireless. It's very hard to do wireless surround.
Well, there are a lot of people who try to do it.
I've tried some of these solutions, and I've been very unhappy.
And wireless sound generally isn't that good. I always recommend getting wired sound if you can. And, of course, that lowers the spousal acceptance factor.
Precisely, because now I have copper speaker wire going all over the house. Yeah. So exactly. I haven't set up the surround yet, and I really am undecided about how to do this. I have 3-channel. You know, I have a center and left, right. Actually, 3.1 because I have a sub.
Uh-huh.
It's those 2 back channels I just don't know how to do.
Well, have you got the Sonos sound bar you're talking about?
No,
we
have that in one in the gym.
Oh, I see. Okay.
This is starting to sound more and more like an Arab oil mogul here. I know. It's just a big shack. So in my den, which is my, man cave.
Your man cave.
I have regular stereo, Aparian stereo speakers.
I see.
And I have them hooked up to a Sonos Connect. So they're on the Sonos system as well, which is very nice. But I haven't hooked up and I have the surrounds. I just haven't hooked them up. You noticed when you came over to my house my previous house, that I didn't have them hooked up either. It's the same problem.
That's right.
I can't figure out how. And by the way, surrounds are supposed to be like where your ears are, right? Left, not behind you. But
well,
like,
more or less to the side, slightly behind you and above you.
So that means a wire going from in front of me to up and
Now, as I recall, I have to look this up, but I think Aperion actually
makes a
wireless system that works pretty good.
All right. Well, maybe I have to trade those.
So you have to look into that, because that is a big problem, running wires back to your surround speakers or to your subwoofer. Vizio soundbars, actually, some of them come with surround speakers and a subwoofer. The subwoofer is wireless, and you place it in the back of the room, and then the surround speakers attach to it with wires. But you don't have to run wires from the front to the back of the room. So that's one solution. The problem, of course, with wireless, particularly like 5 gigahertz or 2.4 gigahertz, is that there's lots of other stuff operating in that frequency range.
Oh,
and
Lord,
so not only do you get latency, but you also get interference and dropouts, and things just don't sound as good, generally speaking. The same is true with streaming media from the internet or from, say, a computer in your home over your LAN, over your local area network. Streaming at Wi-Fi or using a hardwire Ethernet connection. And I always recommend an Ethernet connection over Wi-Fi because of, again, the latency issue and the interference issue. Generally speaking, Wi-Fi just doesn't stream media, particularly when we're talking video. Audio is not so bad. You can actually kind of get away with it. And certainly Sonos has gotten away with it beautifully, but they had to build their own network.
Yeah, they do magic.
It's this mesh network that they built specifically and dedicated to the Sonos system, which lets it work much better than your typical average thing. But I know Aperion does have a wireless option.
I'm looking at it.
Wireless system. Yeah. So I would look into that, particularly since you have the Aperion speakers.
Yeah. Yeah, there's really no good solution on this one. That's why people use sound bars to try to simulate surround sound and all of that.
Yeah.
Or you make a home theater and you don't let your wife in. Pay no attention. There's wires, I know. But it sounds great.
Well, you know, I've been doing a bunch of I've been profiling home theaters that our members on AVS Forum have built. We now have a feature called Home Theater of the Month.
What a good idea.
And I'm amazed at these people, these guys mostly, who build their own home theaters. And they look like fully professional installations, but they do it themselves with their own two hands. They build all the wiring and they build all the woodwork and all the acoustic treatments and everything. And they hide all the wires.
Yeah.
And it looks gorgeous.
Yeah.
So, you know, you put a little effort into it. You run the wires in a, you know,
if you're willing to open up the walls, it's a snap.
Well, some of these guys actually built. The last one I did was actually in Santa Cruz, California, one of my favorite places in the universe. And he actually had to excavate out from under his house to build his cave.
That's going too far. That's literally a cave.
It's literally a cave.
Literally a cave.
Yeah,
I think I've been happy with 3.1. You know, the only thing surrounds gets you is when you're watching a movie and things go, you know, jets fly overhead, or you're watching a ball game.
But the whole point is immersion, right?
Well, if you really want to get immersed,
yeah. I just heard a demo of
You Shouldn't Be Married. It's that. Be single. And have a good home theater system.
My wife enjoys the home theater surround sound system.
That's the thing, is to get that spousal acceptance factor by demonstration.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's how anything gets adopted, really, is by demonstration. I mean, I can talk about it and I can write about it, but it's not the same as actually experiencing.
Right.
I was over at a dub stage a couple days ago listening to a demo of Barco Oro, which is a commercial theater sound system. It's sort of in competition with Dolby Atmos with speakers overhead and everything. And it sounded fantastic.
You remember when we went to Lucas Sound?
Exactly.
And they have a big orchestral sound stage there, and they were using, I don't remember what speakers, but it was going in the concert hall and then going back into the studio. It was great. Anyway, we're out of time. Thank you, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Tony in Buffalo, New York. You're next. Leo Laporte here. Hi, Tony.
Hey, Leo.
Hey.
Leo, Devo is one of my Wi-Fi network names. I just wanted to let you know that.
So, I ask people this. How do you name your Wi-Fi network? We have somebody around here who's named theirs FBI Surveillance Van. Actually, it could be an FBI. I don't know, but I don't think so. Sometimes I see people name their Wi-Fi, you know, don't steal me. But it is my advice, if you use a Wi-Fi network, not to say, you know, Leo Laporte's Wi-Fi and give the address, you know. Come on in.
Right.
So it's a good idea to have. So do you use Rock Bands for names? Or?
Yes, I do. The one I'm on right now is Pretenders.
I like that. That's a good idea. I was doing dead rock stars, and it's a little morbid. I had Joplin, Hendrix, Morrison. I'm currently using Winehouse. That's really sad. So maybe I should maybe something lighter. I was thinking Constellations. That's very popular with sysadmins. Name servers Arcturus, Calliope. But nobody could spell Beetlejuice. So anyway, what can I do for you today?
Well, I have an iMac, and I have Super Duper.
Love Super Duper. That's a copy and backup program that I recommend all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I have a 1.5 terabyte Toshiba external hard drive. It's a small one. You know, it's about the size of a phone.
Yeah, one of those little. Is it bus powered, or do you have to plug it into the wall?
It's USB, USB powered.
That's nice. That's what we call that bus power, because it's small enough that you can get all the juice from the USB drive.
USB right, power. And when I schedule to copy with Super Duper, it comes up, it says failed to copy, and it's like a permissions, it's like a...
Yeah, this is something that seems to happen with Macs a lot, the inability, sometimes drives become read-only.
Exactly.
Yeah. And
I get info on it, Leo. If I right-click it and get info and go in there and change it, then I can manually do a copy right there, and it works.
Oh, that's interesting.
And then when I do a schedule, you know, I usually do a backup once a week, like on a Sunday night.
Right.
And it doesn't, even though I change it and lock it, the next time, super duper, like the next Sunday when it goes to copy, it gives me the same error.
Sounds like a super duper problem.
Yeah.
I would play with the super duper settings. You know, one of the things that you can copy, and you might have checked this, is the existing permissions and things like that over. I wonder if that's causing the problem. Anybody in the chat room have any suggestions? I don't know off the top of my head. Might be a good place to go to the super duper forums, stuff like that, and see. It must be happening to other people. Off the top of my head, I apologize. I don't know, Tony, off the top of my head, but maybe somebody can figure that out. Super duper is a so what he's doing, and I should, it'd be a good time to do a little Carbonite mention here. When we come back, we'll talk to Mike in Menifee, California, about the new Surface tablet from Microsoft. Backing up is complicated, and if you do it wrong, you're running a risk of losing your data. Now, if you're an individual, that means maybe losing those baby pictures or your emails or, you know, financial records, stuff you really don't want to lose. If you're a small business, think about that. Even more serious, you could be putting your business in jeopardy. You lose accounts, clients, receivables and payables, suppliers. That would be bad. A lot of people do what Tony was doing, a local backup. I think you should do that. I agree. That's a great first step. But what if there's a hurricane or an earthquake or a tsunami or somebody breaks in and steals everything? Then your backups are gone too. That's why I recommend that people use Carbonite online backup. It's like your third step in backing up. Backup locally, but also backup off-site. Nice thing about Carbonite, especially if you're a business, you don't have to think about it. You don't have to sign an employee to back up the network. It just happens automatically whenever you're online, continuously. You can access your Carbonite data from any computer. You just log on to your account. There's your stuff. It's a nice way to verify stuff's there. It's also a great way to access data when you're on the road. You can also use their free smartphone apps. Best of all of this is very affordable. For a single computer, $59.99 a year, less than $5 a month. They've got plans for business, always one yearly flat rate, no matter how much data you have. Check it out, Carbonite.com. If you use my name, Leo, you could try it free for 2 weeks. You don't need to give them a credit card, free, you know. But if you decide that you do want to buy it, use my name, Leo, because you'll get 2 months free with purchase. You got to back it up to get it back to do it right with Carbonite. Mike in Menifee, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
I am well. How are you?
I am doing fantastic on a Saturday afternoon.
Okie dokie.
Let me tell you what I do first. I do construction inspection.
Okay.
And I use my Galaxy Note 3 and a Windows netbook with Windows 7 to do my reports.
On the job site?
On the job site, yes.
That's great.
Okay, so now I need to upgrade my my computer because this thing is getting old and it's not doing what I need it to do fast enough. And I want to upgrade to a tablet. I looked at the Galaxy Tabs, the 10-inch tablets, but I don't know if I can do PDF markup on that.
Why do you use both a Windows netbook and an Android tablet? Do you need to use both, or you just do that because that's what you got?
Well, I use my Galaxy Note 3, the phone.
Ah, I see. So that's your phone.
I use that to take a picture.
Got it. An app called Cam Scanner
of like the job site plans.
Let me recommend you take a look at, there's something from Dell that might be just right for you. It's kind of the best of both worlds. This is their new Dell Venue. And they have a Windows 8 Pro. It's only 8 inches. So it's small enough that it could actually take the place of the Note and the netbook. But it's full Windows.
Okay.
I think that the people who have this are raving about it, and they're very affordable. They start at $300.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's essentially, this is, remember I was talking about how Windows 8 was moving, kind of trying to make the transition, Microsoft trying to make the transition from desktop to tablet. This is probably the best experience of that. Or maybe a Surface, but, this is less expensive than Microsoft Surface Pro. The Surface 2 Pro is very nice. It's a little big. I don't know. Have you felt the Surface 2 yet?
I did. It's a little pricey. I went into Best Buy. And
it's expensive and it's heavy.
They were almost shooing me away from the Surface Pro.
Oh, my goodness. Really?
They were having me look at, like, HP and another.
That's interesting. I don't know if I would trust that. That maybe they make a better commission on it. I don't know. I would say look at this Dell Venue. Price is right. They're very affordable. You get the Dell Venue 8 Pro plus a case plus a stylus for $370. Lots less.
Wow, that's a good price.
Lots less.
Does it have a stylus where I can highlight areas?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Okay.
And it's Windows. Wow, it's Windows 8.
And it's Windows.
Yeah.
Because my company, they send me these PDFs that are not editable. So I use Nitro PDF to mark up my forms. So that's why I want to stay with either Windows or use maybe an Android that does PDF stuff.
You could do that. You probably could do it on Android. I know you could do it on an iPad, for instance, with PDF Pen Pro. There are programs out there that will let you do markup. But if you're using Windows, I bet you there's Windows apps that you use to do estimates, things like that. If you need to use Windows, I think this is a very good place to go. Look at this Dell Venue. Everybody I know who's tried it really likes it. And
wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'll take a look at that.
Much more affordable.
And,
yeah.
And then you were talking about Wi-Fi network names. My at home, mine is Eastbound and Down. one of my favorite TV shows.
That would be good. Name all of your Wi-Fi access spots after HBO programs. You could have Sopranos, Girls, Eastbound and Down. I love Eastbound and Down. That is a wild show. Not for the children.
No. One more question, Leo?
Yeah.
Now, I just bought my son the latest copy of Call of Duty Ghosts for his Xbox.
Oh, fun. Yeah.
Now,
I think
the Xbox One is coming out. Do I have to buy another copy of Call of Duty for that?
Yes, you do.
Oh, lovely.
Yes, you do. It's completely incompatible. Welcome to the wild world of Microsoft. No, both PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, the new consoles, are completely incompatible with previous versions. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet, cell phones and camcorders, MP3 players, home theaters, GPSs. I'm throwing in every obsolete technology I can think of. MP3 players. You know, on the last Apple announcement a couple of weeks ago, which would normally be their October announcement, they announced iPods. Did they mention iPod at all? No. You don't need an MP3 player. You've got a smartphone, and most people, I think, use that for their MP3 player. Speaking of smartphones, newest smartphone, and I think the last for this holiday buying season is out. They announced it on Halloween, and it shipped. I ordered mine the first day, and I got it on Monday. I've been playing with it. It's Google's Nexus 5. So this is Google has been doing this for some time now, where they offer an Android phone that is pure Google, doesn't have a lot of stuff put on it by the manufacturer. You know how Samsung just loads it up with crazy, weird stuff. LG, HTC, they all have their own unique software on there, and that's they consider their differentiator. And then on top of that, you get the wireless companies, AT&T and Verizon and so forth, that they put, you know, all sorts of stuff that you can't erase, all sorts of applications you can't erase. So Google, I think, wants people to – two things Google's trying to do with this. Show what it looks like when you don't have all that junk on an Android phone, what they call a pure Android experience or the Google experience phone. But they also want to have an inexpensive phone for people who want to develop Android software. This is $350 unsubsidized, out the door, about half what a top-of-the-line Android phone would cost if you got it from Samsung or HTC. That's for the 16-gig version. They also have a 32-gig version. It's $400. Still, half the iPhone, half the HTC One or the Galaxy S4 or the Galaxy Note 3. Those are all the kind of the top of the line phones. And you know, it's a great phone. 5-inch screen, really beautiful screen. Best camera yet on an Android phone, and if you ask me, just very nice. So, I've been playing with it for a week, and I'm still a Moto X user. That's my go-to phone because there's a few little things the Moto X does, the things that Motorola's added on top of the Google experience that I kind of am attached to. The ability to say, "Okay, Google now," and although this new Nexus 5 does a little bit of that, but you have to have the phone unlocked. And there's just a power sleep or whatever they call it, where you see, you know, your messages come in while the phone is off. They just kind of pop up on the screen and then they fade out again. It's really kind of a nice feature. The Moto X knows when I'm driving or in a meeting. When I'm in a meeting, and you know, I'm in a meeting right now. Did you know that? With you. Yeah. So I tell the phone when I'm in a meeting, and it looks on the calendar to see if there's somebody, you have an appointment with somebody. If it sees that, it won't ring, which is great. If it sees you're driving, this is nice. And if you had a kid, this would be a great thing. It will say, "I'm not going to answer the phone," but it sends a text message that says, "I'm driving right now, but I'll call you back." That's nice. It's little things like that. I suppose some of those you could do with a third-party application, but the hardware on the Moto X is designed to watch and do this stuff in a low-power mode, and that's the real issue. You could have third-party software to do all of it, but it would drain the battery. And there's the hardware of the Moto X is designed to do that. So I love the Nexus 5. Love it. And I think for a lot of people, this will be the right choice. And certainly if you're price sensitive, $350 is great. I put it on T-Mobile. You can get an inexpensive T-Mobile plan. And Bob's your uncle, whoever that is. But for me, the Moto X. Now, one of the things I liked about the Moto X is the Moto Maker. Until now, AT&T's had an exclusive, but that's about to break in the next couple of weeks. I think you'll be able to use the Moto Maker on Sprint and Verizon. That means, and maybe T-Mobile too, that means you'll be able to go to the Moto Maker site and customize your phone and have it shipped to you. So I got a red back with black accents and all that stuff. The reason I mentioned that is because Moto's really started to put ads everywhere for that. And right now it's an AT&T feature, but soon to be, I think, on other carriers. I'm still waiting. I've seen a few. My friend Guy Kawasaki, who works for Motorola, had one. They have three different kinds of wood backs. I want a wooden phone. What do you think? Is that crazy? You're looking at me funny. Is it the mustache? You know what it is? Movember.
Oh, that's...
Do you know what Movember is?
Mm-hmm.
So it was started by some guys in Australia to promote... to promote help men's awareness of men's health issues. And what guys do... What are they having a party out there? Hey, shut up. I'm working here. Every time I turn on your microphone, it sounds like there's a party going on. There's a party going on right here. Well, I've got a party on my lip right now, and it's tickling my nose. But I'm doing it in honor of Movember. If you go to Movember.com, just like November with an M, people, men mostly, although I guess some women, are growing mustaches. To promote, I don't want to be sexist, to promote women's health. And I think men's health. Men's health. So it's like wearing, if you want to promote, you know, women's health, you wear, like the NFL pink. Players are wearing pink, right? So guys are growing the mustaches for Movember.
It's actually really
you
cool.
Like
Dr.
It?
Dean would have been a big supporter of that.
Yeah.
Because women's health does get really, like, a little hyper-touted, and the guys...
Well, it should. I think it should. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. For men, for many years, all medicine was based on men, right? They didn't... So, what do you think of my mustache? Kind of not so good, is it?
I think you did not grow that on your own in the last 10
years. All right, I'm throwing it away. It's tickly.
Oh, that's got to be the worst. You're going to get an upper lip rash.
Yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to show support for Movember without actually growing a mustache. Movember.com. Michael in Modesto. Are you celebrating Movember in Modesto?
Hello. How you doing there?
I'm great, Michael.
Yeah, I got a computer that I have built a couple years back now that I have problems with where, and I took it into a local shop here, office store, and it said it had viruses. So I went ahead and cleaned the slate and still having the same problem where the computer freezes and it makes a buzz noise in the speaker. Yeah, if I have radio on in the
studio. So what's happening with the buzzing noise is that the computer has stopped in the middle of doing something that perhaps might have made some noise. And once it stops, it's going to keep going. So that's not unusual. I have had that happen many times. The computer crashes hard, and the speaker's going, because it's in the middle of something.
Yeah, and I try to go Control-Alt-Delete, and it does not. It freezes up and buzzes.
Yeah, yeah. If it's buzzing, it's not something a Control-Alt-Delete will fix. It's a hard freeze. And that means since you wiped the drive, that it's a hardware issue.
Okay.
And there's a lot of different hardware issues you could have. You could have the most common would be a power supply failure. Fortunately, it's also fairly inexpensive. Since you built it, you know what the power supply is just bolted onto the case.
Yeah. What I was curious on is, I'm not sure, and I'm thinking now, would it be possibly be the hard drive?
Not likely.
Okay.
What you're getting is a pretty hard, boom, failure. It most likely is a power supply issue, but it could be a motherboard issue. That's okay. Expensive. Could be a memory issue. Little less expensive. Hard drive is the least likely. Hard drive crashes. Let's say you have a defect in your hard drive. That most likely materializes as you're booting up and it won't finish booting. Or you're running and you get to a certain point and it doesn't work right. It usually doesn't freeze hard like that. That sounds like a serious hardware failure. The beep, the buzzing might be that's trying to beep, but then it dies in the middle of the beep.
Okay. I may mention lastly that I do normally now, when I'm playing like Battlefield,
yeah,
I have no problem with the computer.
Well, when does it do this?
It does it mostly when I'm doing like stuff on the internet with Firefox or Google Chrome.
Oh, interesting. So it's not doing it all the time. It starts up normally and runs, and then all of a sudden it will do it.
Yeah, and it does it with any...
Could be also overheating. I would look at power supply. Make sure your fans are running properly. The problem is when you build your own, you're the warranty guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Welcome back, Nathan. Good to have you back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 888-ASK-LEO. That's my phone number, 888-827-5536. If you have, and if you're international, outside of the U.S. and Canada, you can call that with Skype and that'll work. It'll be still toll-free. We also have a website, techguylabs.com. We put the stuff on there. As we go, James DeRuo was writing it down. So if you hear me mention a link or mention something, James will put it in the show notes. By the next few days, we will have audio and video of the show up, divided up question by question, so you can go directly to the question, my answer, and then add your comments, if you will. If you're one of those people who's listening to me and saying, Leo, you're wrong, or I have an idea, like for our last caller, oh, he should try. Please put it in the show notes because that really makes it valuable. And these are always free, always open to everybody, and they will be in perpetuity thanks to our fine sponsors. We don't need to charge you for that. I know some shows do. We do not. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Zach in Dickinson, North Dakota. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Zach.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
Good, doing good. Colin, I'm just thinking about I'm currently on a family plan on Verizon.
Yes.
And I'm thinking about switching to AT&T, mainly because I'd like to use Nexus 5. I'm tired of all the bloatware that phone manufacturers put in.
We were just talking about that. I mean, it is a pure Google experience. It's also the latest Android 4.4, and there's some nice features to that.
Yeah, and I currently have a Nexus 7. I'm waiting for the...
All right, so you know then all about it, because the Nexus 7 also a pure Google tablet.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you would feel right at home.
No, I recently renewed my contract, so that won't be ending until 2014.
Oh, they got you.
Yeah, they did. So, I mean, I'd probably wait to...
Yeah, you're going to have I don't know what the early termination fee is these days, but I think it's $375, something like that.
Now, since the Nexus 5 is non-contract, do I just need to get a... data plan and talk and text and all that for me?
Well, here's what I did. Yes. So here's, well, if you want to talk and text, you could just use it as a Wi-Fi device. But
right.
you wouldn't, you'd have to use Skype or Tango or Viber or one of those programs to make phone calls. Actually, you can, though. I mean, that you can use it as Wi-Fi only, just as you do your Nexus 7.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Think of it as a small Nexus 7. But if you want to make phone calls on the phone network, and if you want to use 3G or LTE data, yeah, you need to have a plan. I would go. I would look at T-Mobile. See how T-Mobile works in your neighborhood.
I don't think North Dakota has T-Mobile, though. So we just have Verizon. And
then T-Mobile would be a bad choice, yeah.
Yeah, and AT&T.
Yeah, as long as your signal quality is good. Yeah, AT&T is fine. The Nexus works with either. The reason it's those two is they use a technology called GSM. Mm-hmm. Verizon and Sprint use a technology called CDMA, and it's not compatible. You have to get a... But
No, sorry to interrupt.
Go ahead.
Why is Verizon so, I guess, headstrong of not allowing things like the Nexus 5 to be put on their networks?
Yeah, the same thing with the Nexus 7. They said, oh, we can't let it on the network.
And then they were slow with the Windows phones.
Yeah. Verizon, you know, look, all these companies used to be monopolies, used to be Ma Bell, basically. And they still think they're monopolies. They're not. But they think of themselves as monopolies. And they very much want to control everything. There was in 1968... There was a very famous Supreme Court decision, the Carter phone case. AT&T, Ma Bell in those days, controlled the network tightly. You had to use, in fact, you couldn't even buy. You had to rent, you're too young to remember this, Western Electric equipment, big hard rubber, black rubber phones that you would plug into the network. And heaven forfend that you would plug anything that wasn't owned by AT&T into the network. They said, we have to protect the network. And the courts ruled... Carter Phone was a company that made a phone system. It might have been an answering machine. I can't remember. But that you would put on the network. And they said, well, we got to be able to sell this product and put it on the network. And the court said, yes, you can. Opening the way to the buying phones, owning your own phone, answering machines, and all of that. It changed everything. And it, frankly, the network did not suffer. Verizon, though, is still back in that pre-1968 mindset where we got to protect the network. And really what they're protecting is profits. They want to sell you everything. They want to own everything. They want to make sure that you're paying them their fees. And they do, in a way, have a little bit of a monopoly in places like North Dakota. You won't really only have two choices.
Right. And I don't know. I mean, I kind of wish that they would just get with the program, because to me it seems...
Well, they're legally required to get with the program. The FCC's ruled that they should be an open network. And in my opinion, they are in defiance of the Federal Communications Commission. And they need to be spanked. But the FCC seems, unlikely to spank them.
That's a shame.
I know, and I don't know what to do about it, but it really comes from that mindset. You know, the cable companies have the same mindset, this monopolistic mindset where they say, well, it's our way or the highway. If you don't like it, too bad. And I think what the real shame is? I think Google had an opportunity. There was a moment when Google was thinking about buying or tried to buy wireless spectrum, and we all thought, this is what we've been waiting for. Google is going to create the unphone cellular company, the unmonopolist, where it's open, and we all hoped that, and it would be like the Nexus 5 phone. It would be, but the truth is, probably Google would have been just as monopolistic as the rest of them. everybody's loosey-goosey and relaxed when there's no money in it. As soon as there's money in it, it's like, no. So you're kind of stuck with it. And, these early term... This is the only business I know of where you have to pay money to stop doing business with them. That's the example right there, these early termination fees. What if your dry cleaner said, no, we gave you a bag to hold your dry cleaning until you have to be with us 2 years before you can go to another dry cleaner. You got to pay for that bag, dude. What if they did that? Wouldn't that seem absurd? You have to pay us $100 if you want to go to another dry cleaner. You owe us 2 years. It's like serfdom. The phone company say, no, you have to be with us 2 years because we gave you a phone. But the truth is, it's not just a phone. If you change your plan, guess what? Two more years. Two more years. How do they get away with that? Clearly, the FCC has no teeth when it comes to this. None at all. They're not willing to enforce it. So the Nexus 7 is a good example. The Google tablet that is completely compatible with Verizon's network should work fine with Verizon's network. Every other carrier uses it. Verizon has been very slow and still has not approved it because they want you to buy the tablet from them. And this is why, frankly, hardcore geeks like phones like the Nexus 5. They want to be without a contract. So you could get a Nexus 5. You could run it on the AT&T network. You'd have to pay the early termination fee with Verizon, unless you can talk them out of it. Kind of sad, isn't it? Hard to believe. In this day and age, serfdom still exists. 8888-ASK-LEO, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Johnny Jet is here, that big old jet airliner flying Johnny all around the world. He is America's favorite frequent flyer, and United's and Delta's as well. And joins us every week to talk about saving money using technology. And by the way, this is a good time because here comes Thanksgiving. It must be one of the top flying weekends in the U.S.
For sure. And we talked about it before, how you can save some money. I have a list of 10 things on my website. We've only gotten through two of them every time we speak. So let's try and cruise through it real quick.
I need to give you more time, obviously.
We need to come up and do a show for an hour or something.
We're going to. That's the next thing. I want to do a Johnny Jet show, but that's another matter. So what were the two that we've already covered?
Be flexible. So you're not going to get a cheap ticket if you're trying to leave Wednesday before and return Sunday or Monday after. You got to be flexible. That's the number one tip, and that's the biggest takeaway. At any time you want to travel, usually the best days of fly anytime are Tuesday, Wednesday, and Saturdays, except this Thanksgiving, because Wednesday is the most expensive time. Everyone wants to get away. You're not going to get a deal. Don't even bother trying. And if you haven't bought your ticket for that Wednesday, it's only going to go up. It's not going down. Don't think it's going to go down. So don't wait till the last minute. Just start shopping around now. Also, you want to consider the time of day. So most people say, they want to leave at 3 p.m. on Wednesday. I mean, first of all, Wednesday is a bad day to travel, but getting picky like 3 p.m. after kids are out of school is even going to be worse.
Oh, interesting.
Or people out of work. When you do the fare searches, you want to do it early. Just leave it anytime. Because you know what? If there's a flight at 6 a.m., you might get up, or I would get up if it's $100 cheaper,
right,
especially if you have a family of
right,
two, three, four, whatever.
That can make a big difference.
Also, alternate airports. We talked about it before. Don't just look at the one main airport, wherever you're coming from or where you're going to. So if you're in San Francisco, look at Oakland. Look at San Jose. And if you're flying to South Florida, don't just look at Miami. Look at Fort Lauderdale. If you're going to New York, don't look at JFK. Look at LaGuardia or Newark.
Most of the travel finding sites like Expedia will let you check that box. And that's a good idea. If you live in a town with multiple choices.
You have to check it.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to choose it, yeah.
And
they also sometimes have flexible dates, which is nice.
For sure. And I actually like to use ITA Matrix, which is owned by Google, and you can put in a flexible search and you can find out what's the cheapest days to fly.
You have a search on your site.
A great search engine on my site. So it's not ITA. ITA you can't book. You can't
It's just a searcher.
It's just a search. So you can find out, and then it will lead you into that airline or whatever. But on my website, I have a search engine on there where you put in your city pairs, your dates, and it will pop up six different websites.
I didn't even know about this ITA software. And they also have iOS and Android apps.
Google bought these guys for over $1 billion.
Wow. So the app is called On the Fly. On the Fly. But you can't buy a ticket.
Can't buy a ticket. You're just doing your search. And this is what all the frequent flyers and the mileage junkies, this is what they use. They use this tool.
So does this have everybody? Because that's one problem I have with a lot of the tools is Southwest.
They don't have Southwest.
You have to go to Southwest.
But Southwest is, not the cheapest unless you're checking a bag. So Southwest is not always the cheapest. But when they have a sale, you want to jump on Southwest tickets. Or if you're checking a bag, you definitely want to consider Southwest, since they don't charge for the first two bags.
Now,
JetBlue doesn't charge for the first
bag. I always check that nonstop box. I think that's a bad idea for getting the best deal, right?
Again, you don't want to do that. You want to be flexible. So don't check the nonstop. Although, you know, if time is money to you and you want to get to your destination,
yeah.
you don't want to have, you know.
I never fly through Chicago. Everybody wants to fly, you know, United, I guess that's their hub or something, but everybody wants to fly through Chicago, and it's always bad weather in Chicago. It's never.
Yep. Wintertime, snow, summertime, thunderstorms in the afternoon.
So,
So, you know, it's worth it to me not to fly through those cities. I'll spend, you know, $80 or whatever more to fly nonstop.
But know that you're doing that.
But I'm a single traveler, too, most of the time, so. If I had a family, I would probably say, okay, let's make the stop.
Right.
All right. So that's one of my tips. Consider making a top. Also, we talked about search tools. Sign up for fare alerts. We can do a whole program on this. But there are different websites, Airfare Watchdog, Yapta, Fare Compare.
That's not going to help you for Thanksgiving, though, right? That's more for like – really?
No, it will help you, of course. So you put in what your city pairs are, the date you want to travel, and what you want to pay. So if it drops below, let's say you want to go San Francisco to New York one way and you don't want to pay more than $200, it will alert you when that price drops below $200. And then you just jump on it right away. You can't wait.
So that's cool. So that's really good to know. All right.
My favorite one is Kayak out of those. And Yapta does a good job too.
I like Kayak. So they have an alert system as well.
They do.
Okay.
And then, you know, you always want to speak to a human. You know, a travel agent is worth it sometimes.
This is ironic because everybody said it's the end of the line. Internet is going to eliminate travel agents. Everybody's just going to book directly. But it still seems that humans have an advantage if they know the ins and outs. If you have a good – if Johnny Jett ever were a travel agent, I'd hire you.
Travel agents are, you know, they're making a comeback.
If they're still in business today, it's because they're good, I would guess.
Because they have connections.
Right.
They can get you upgraded. They know the tricks. So one time, I think I mentioned it before, I was flying London to Bangkok, and all I could find was $1,000 online. I called my travel agent. He goes, hey, I can get you $550, but you have to make a stop in Abu Dhabi.
This is, by the way, underscores, everybody says, oh, the internet's putting us all out of business. You know, Blockbuster just went out of business, the movie store. But the key is service. That's how you stay in business against the internet. You provide
24/7. You get a travel agent that's 24/7. So let's say the volcano erupts in Iceland again.
Right.
And instead of staying online for 5 hours trying to get through to the airline, you just call your travel agent and let them do it for you.
It costs more, though, doesn't it? I mean, you pay the – or do the airlines pay the travel agent? Who pays the travel agent?
Sometimes travel agents pay you. I mean, you have to pay them maybe a $25 fee on some tickets.
Because the airlines are squeezing them, aren't they? The airlines are cutting
them. The airlines don't pay them anymore.
They don't.
They make their money from package deals, hotels, cruises.
Mm.
So that's why if you're just booking a hotel, an airline ticket, they'll usually charge you a fee.
I see.
And it starts usually at $25.
So if you book a cruise, every once in a while just to kind of say, here, this is for you. A little something.
Yeah, no, but the cruises are good. I mean, you want a cruise because they can get you upgraded for free to a really good cabin.
Aha.
So that's why you want to.
I got to get a travel agent. This is good stuff. I never had a I stopped using travel agents.
This last cruise you took, you just booked directly?
Yeah.
No, that's a mistake, Leo. Man, I could have got you upgraded.
It was really expensive, too. Use frequent flyer miles if you've got them.
Yep, for sure. And you know what? And United just devalued theirs this week, so everyone's up in arms. And United, you just said, I'm one of United's freaking favorite flyers. It's not true right now because I've been tweeting bad things about them, and they're tweeting me back.
That's my frequent flyer is United. They just changed the deal?
They just devalued them. Starting in February,
what?
You know, if you want to fly premium classes, especially on that like Lufthansa flight that you took,
yeah,
they're up to 85% more.
No! Oh!
Especially on their partner flights for premium seats. For domestic, I think it's only 10%. But
you know, I have like 400,000 miles, and now it's worth less.
You need to use them, but use them now before February 1st. Actually, you can book them now before February 1st and use them for the following year.
You know how I got so many miles is I got a United credit card, and I use that for everything. Pay it off every month so I don't have to pay any extra interest. And and you get a buck a mile.
That's a whole another game, and we talked about it. I mentioned a couple credit cards on there.
Yeah.
I
but now they're useless because I've been...
Well, the United one is actually taking a big hit. I would not recommend that credit
card.
I'm
going to change it. All right. JohnnyJett.com if you want to learn more. There's more tips there, and he's got a travel search engine and all the stuff we just talked about. He's the greatest. Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you.
Follow him on Twitter, too, at JohnnyJett. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Down in Monterey and all over the country, 200 stations strong. on the Tech Guy Radio Network. Leo Laporte here, and our phone ranger, Heather Hummina. And let's go back to the phones. I don't know who we should talk to, Heather. You have a preference, somebody? Maybe, how about Dennis? You like Dennis? All right, Dennis in Walnut, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Yes, Leo, this is Dennis.
Hey, Dennis.
Hey, my wife has a Toshiba satellite that we've had 1 year and 1 month.
And it died 1 year and 1 month. That's unbelievable. How do they work that out? The technology industry is truly amazing. There must be a clock in that thing. I don't know how they... The day after the warranty wears out... Holy cow.
Anyway, it's got Windows 7 on it, and all of a sudden, even though it's also covered with Microsoft Security Essentials, a virus got through, and it reprogrammed the keys and the little mouse pad thing. But if I plug in an auxiliary keypad and an auxiliary wireless mouse through the USB, it works fine with those two. But how can I get the keys back to where they're supposed to be?
Well, now I'm curious. Sometimes it's just a caps, the shift lock. There's a lock or a num lock. There's a lock on the.
Yeah, no,
it's not that. Okay.
Yeah.
So all the keys are scrambled up.
Like six of the keys. One of them is an R, and when you hit the R, it operates the function key that turns off the mouse pad, which is one of the keys, of course, that you.
This is probably not a virus.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. Do you have any other symptoms?
Just those six keys and the mouse. In fact, that was my first thought, too. And I took an air thing and sprayed out the keyboard and got all the crumbs off from under the keys and everything.
Yeah. Now, you know, there is a numlock key on the keyboard. If you press it, that will change the behavior of that. If the R key, as a matter of fact.
Interesting.
You know, okay. It could be a stuck key, but this is because it's a laptop.
Yeah.
It's non-trivial to remove the keyboard, but you did the right thing, which is you plugged in a USB keyboard and everything works. So we know what's wrong. It's that little keyboard.
Right.
It could be short-circuited. It could be there's junk in there. You tried to clean it, but who knows if you cleaned it. Make sure you didn't change the keyboard profile. So you go into the software and look at the keyboard profile. In fact, you might even change it to something else, see if it works better. Maybe, you know, there's a little bit of software that says which key goes to mapped to which function.
Right.
Could be that software just got a little bit corrupted. So go into the control panel settings and change the keyboard profile, maybe to a Dvorak keyboard or a French keyboard or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and see. And I bet you it's just software. If you have a restore point.
I tried that, and I went back. Several times, and the exact same thing.
Okay. Check the, they're telling me, and this is true, the accessibility settings in Windows. You could have sticky keys turned on. That's a very easy thing to do if you lean on the shift key too long.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's not a virus. It's just keyboard map is changed.
Oh.
And
I just noticed that the numlock is locked on.
Yeah. There you go. That's it.
Wow.
That's it. So now you need to unlock the numlock. And why is that on? I don't know. But I don't think I think you're fine.
Yeah.
It's just something a little bit screwed up in there.
I originally accused my wife of eating in front of her keyboard.
Well, who doesn't after all? In fact, I don't ever want to read that story. But every once in a while, Huffington Post just had a story, 10 germs you don't want to know about. And they always say, you know, your kitchen sink is dirtier than your bathroom and things like that. I don't want to know. I hate to think what the keyboard is. I mean, I can look at it and tell it's disgusting. I mean, that's not a good sign. I don't want to shine an ultraviolet light on that thing.
Yes. I see a hair sticking.
Yeah. You can get that as a part. It's just connected by a ribbon cable. But I would say it's probably software, not even a physical problem with the keyboard. So check it out. You know, we used to get, Heather, a lot of calls from people, and I kind of poo-pooed it. They would say, my computer is inhabited. You know, people type messages to me. It's possessed. I need an exorcism. And now I think maybe I shouldn't have mocked that. The FBI is looking for a hacker who has released a program. It's actually on the FBI's list of most wanted cyber criminals. He's a former San Diego College student. He developed a program. He charged $89 for it. It was called Lover Spy. He sold it from his apartment. It was advertised as a way to, quote, catch a cheating lover by sending the person an electronic greeting card. If you ever get one of those, you know, mom just sent you a birthday card, you open it up. And it runs. Oh, that's cute. It's snow falling on the little house. Merry Christmas. First of all, don't send those. Don't open them. And if you got this one, it would install software on the computer of your cheating spouse or lover to capture emails and instant messages, to spy on them via the webcam. It allowed you to control their computer. So, you know, this story that people were telling us about their possessed computer, maybe it was this guy. This has been going on for years. He was indicted in 2005. Apparently, he made very little money on the scheme. actually, the guy who was indicted in that's a different guy, 2005. He made lots of money on the scheme. The San Diego kid, not so much. Apparently, according to the FBI, LoverSpy is one of many illegal hacking-for-hire services. In one case earlier this year, a New York police detective, this is from ABC News, a New York police detective was arrested for spending more than $4,000 on hacking services to obtain the emails of more than a dozen of his colleagues. Many of the operators are based overseas. So you hire a hacker, they get in the computer, and then they say, well, okay, we got it. What do you want to do now? For $349 a year, FlexiSpy of Wilmington, Delaware, captures every Facebook message, email, text, and photo sent from a phone, as well as recording all phone calls. Of course, it's highly illegal. FBI also searching for a Russian, Alexei Balun, who allegedly broke into the computer networks of three major e-commerce companies in the U.S., stole their databases and encrypted passwords, and then sold them. That's like that Adobe thing I was talking about. So, you know, you want to stay up on what's going on in the in the cyber spy world. Just look at the FBI. You know, they used to have the Al Capone Most Wanted. Now they have the Most Wanted, the list of cyber hackers, cyber criminals. Unbelievable. 8888 to ask Leo. Lance in San Clemente, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Lance.
Hey.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
Hey, I've got an issue with Firefox. I've had the custom homepage that's been there forever for me. And then I open it up, and now it's blank, and I can't even find it.
Were you using iGoogle?
I don't even know what that is. No, yeah. I wasn't.
So you were using the Firefox's own custom homepage?
Yeah, and you had the choice of designing it and everything.
Yes, I'm wondering if that was iGoogle. Does Firefox... Let me launch. I don't know if Firefox has a custom homepage. I'm looking at my Firefox just to see. I have it my own homepage set.
Well, could you put, you know, I had news stations on there. I had a couple, three different.
So Google used to have this service. It was called iGoogle. They turned it off at the end of the month. I'm guessing.
I was getting that.
So you were using iGoogle. Yeah, so now all it does is it sends you to google.com. So what you need to do is create a new one. You know, the easiest way is probably, there are still people who do this. Yahoo still has My Yahoo. Okay. So that's very similar. It's my.yahoo.com. Okay. Very, you know, the only difference is they show some ads on it, but it has much of the same thing. In fact, if you had iGoogle settings, I think it's probably too late now, but you could import them into my.yahoo.com. There are others, though, that are quite good. ProtoPage is a little more flexible. Protopage.com. I'll put a link in the show notes to all of these sites. So they let you customize your start page to include, like you said, radio stations or whatever you're looking for. And then you would go into the Firefox settings and you'd say, I want you to use this as my start page. It'd be in the general. When Firefox starts, use a custom home page. And then you would just say, you know, be on the proto page, click use current page, and it will automatically go there when you start up.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so I Googled, Google decided this wasn't a business it wanted to be in, or I don't know. You know, Google kills stuff pretty randomly. So that's what happened. You were using iGoogle. And now you can, but there's ProtoPage, there's others. NetVibes is another one. These are all free. So if you like Yahoo, my.yahoo.com. Otherwise, NetVibes, ProtoPage. IGHome.com is a new one, kind of like iGoogle. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, our show today brought to you by ProXPN. If you ever use... the Wi-Fi at a open access spot, you know, you go to a coffee shop and use it. if you ever use the internet at a hotel, you are on a shared network. If it's a Wi-Fi one, it's a shared network that anybody else can look at and see what's going on. It means that anybody can spy on what you're doing. Now, the way around this, of course, is encryption. And that's why banks and Amazon.com use encryption. But many times, the encryption is unreliable. For instance, many email service providers still don't encrypt your email login and password. So if you go to a Wi-Fi, a lot of people don't know this, you go to an open hotspot, and you don't even have to log in your email because your email program on your computer probably just does that every 20 minutes automatically, right? And it does that. Bad news. You are pwned, as we say in the business. The guy has your email login and password, and you don't even have to know this. You may not know it. And then he can, whenever he wants, get your email without even you knowing it. If he were really malicious, he would then go around to all the sites like Twitter and Facebook and say, oh, I forgot my password, have them mail a reset to that email address, and then take over all your site. You could see the problem here. That's why when you use an open Wi-Fi access spot or hotel internet access, I strongly recommend you protect yourself with a VPN, a virtual private network. Now, you can run your own, but it's complicated. It's tricky. Lots of people prefer to use a service provider, and that's where ProXPN comes in. They use OpenVPN software. It's the best in the business. They provide the server for you. There's an advantage to that, by the way. One of the things they can also give you, their servers are all over the world, including Singapore, Amsterdam, London. So when you emerge on the, you're encrypted right up to their server. When you emerge on the public internet, it looks like you're in London or Amsterdam or Singapore. So you can get around geographic restrictions. Even at home, you know, internet service providers are often monitoring what you're doing. Because of the six strikes rule, they may say, hey, we're going to knock you off the internet because you're pirating stuff. When there's no appeal to that. If you really want to protect your privacy online, a VPN is such a great solution. And ProXPN makes it easy. We've got a special deal for you. Take a look at ProXPN. Go to proxpn.com/twit and learn all about it. They offer OpenVPN as well as PPTP, and they have, which is really nice, mobile apps for iPhone and Android now so that you can use OpenVPN on a mobile device, which you couldn't for a long time, and that's very nice. Really a great way to protect you. Now, there is the free version, but I got to tell you, eventually, you know, try it free if you want, but eventually you're going to want to get the paid version. Normally, $10 a month, $75 for an entire year. If you use our offer code, TechGuy offer code, TG20, you'll get 20% off, not for the first month or the first year, but for the life of your account, forever. That means less than $5 a month on the yearly plan. For that kind of protection, it's well, well worth it. Protect yourself online against snoops, against your ISP, bypass internet filtering and blocked websites, bypass geographic restrictions. ProXPN. They also have software for Windows and Mac that gives you don't have to use it, but it gives you advanced control. I want you to try it today. ProXPN.com. We had our tech, our security guy, Steve Gibson, vet it, and he gave it 2 thumbs up. ProXPN.com/twit to find out more. Use our offer code TG20 to get 20% off. Well, hey, hey, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you have a question. You want to talk high tech with me? A comment, a suggestion? It doesn't have to always be, my computer won't work. It could be, what cell phone do I want by? And that's a challenge nowadays, isn't it? Did you buy Twitter stock, anybody? No. See, the problem with that is unless you are an institutional investor or have best buddies on Wall Street, even though the Twitter initial public offering, it went public, you know, this week, even though it was $27 at the initial public offering, there was no way that you can get in unless you have a, you know, special in at that price. You'd probably be getting the higher price. It ended up 73% higher by the end of the day. So a lot of people apparently believe that Twitter is going to be the next big thing. I hope they understand that, in fact, the Twitter has never made a profit, right? right? You understand that. That's why, you know, look, I don't recommend stocks on the air because I would have to go through a lot of hoops to do so. It's gone down a little bit now. It's down $3, $41.65. So Time Magazine did an interesting calculator. How much Twitter owes you? See, really, you shouldn't be buying Twitter stock. They should be giving you something. Because what is Twitter, after all, but the sum of all the tweets, the people who put tweets on Twitter? You don't make money. Twitter makes money. If nobody used Twitter, would it be worth $24.9 billion? No, it would not. It would be worth zero zilch, nada, nothing, bupkis. It's worth what it's worth because everybody uses it. So Time Magazine put together a calculator. I think this is a good thing. They did a little. So there are 200, according to all the information Twitter filed with its IPO, there are 230 million active Twitter users, half a billion tweets a day. Twitter says we deliver more than 200 billion tweets per day to our users. Delivering a tweet, in other words, is a tweet seen by the follower of another user. So you tweet and somebody sees it, that's a delivery. That means, in other words, that every one of the half a billion daily tweets is delivered to an average of 400 people. You got to follow along here. The math is complicated. So you divide $24.9 billion by 200 billion tweets. It means that each tweet is worth 12.45 cents per day, per daily eyeball. Okay, so now you put in, now you could do the math. You put in your handle on this Time Magazine page. I'm going to put in Leo Laporte, and it'll calculate how much Twitter owes you. What is your share of Twitter's success? In my case, it says I've done 6,771 tweets. I've been on Twitter 2,407 days. That is an average of 2.8 tweets per day. I have roughly half a million followers. That means 1.3 million potential eyeballs. 25% of those pay attention. See, we're going to be conservative here. We're going to assume that 75% of the eyeballs that follow me don't actually see my tweets, which is probably accurate. So according to Time Magazine, I own 342,091 eyeballs a day at 12.45 cents per eyeball. Twitter owes me $42,590. Well, I'm not exactly rich, but I wouldn't mind it. I'll take it, Twitter. But then enter somebody like Barack Obama, who has a lot of followers, been on for a long time. According to this, Twitter owes the president $5.1 million. I mean, the premise of this is that Twitter's value comes from the people who tweet. And I think that's true. We'll put a link. It's a long link. I can't just give you the link. It's at newsfeed.time.com, but you know what? We'll put it in the show notes, techguylabs.com, so you can figure out how much Twitter owes you. Good luck collecting. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. Let's go to our next caller, Ann in Yorba Linda, California. Hi, Ann.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure.
I need to get a new laptop. My old one is dying. It's a Toshiba, and it's 5 years old, and it has Windows 7. And I'm looking at ads in the paper. I only have, like, I'm very limited on my budget. I only have, like, $250 to spend just for basic use, just to look at websites and to send emails, like resumes out and stuff. And I found one. It's a Toshiba. It's $229. It's an Intel Celeron processor. It's 4 gigs with 500 hard drive. And I was wondering, I know Celeron's old. Is an old.
No, you know what's funny about the Celeron? It's what is old is new again. Intel, for reasons I really can't fathom, has named a new processor Celeron.
Oh.
So,
really?
And you have just confirmed what I suspected, which is that people would see that and say, well, wait a minute, that was in 1998 that they made that thing. It's back, baby, and it's a newer processor. You know, in your price range, you're not going to get anything that's super wonderful, but that sounds like a pretty capable laptop for that price.
Okay, well, there's another one. What's comparison, a Toshiba or an HP Celeron?
They're roughly the same. What you're getting is equivalent of the netbook. Remember, the netbooks were very popular, sub-$300 laptops. They're not made with the highest quality components. They're, you know, in order to get the price that low, they have to sacrifice some quality. It's not that it won't work, But in your price range, you don't have a lot of choices. I think that either one is probably just fine.
Well, how's the power of the engine in it?
It's adequate. For what you just described, is more than adequate. It's faster than what you have now.
Oh.
Much.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh. That five-year-old computer is a jalopy compared to anything you can buy today.
Okay, that makes sense. And then is Pentium a good one, too, real quick?
Pentium? Somebody selling a Pentium?
Well, it's
going to be an Atom or it's going to be a Celeron in that low end.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Either one is fine. They're more than adequate. Don't worry about the processor. It's more that it'll feel, you know, the keyboard won't feel great. The screen won't be great, mm-hmm. but it might be more than adequate for what you want.
Is there one out there for $250 you can recommend?
Well, I think either of those is fine. They're all going to be about the same at that price point.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling. You know, when you're really price constrained like that, there's not much choice. You're getting the least expensive they can make. In fact, it's amazing that you can get anything at that price. To me, it blows me away. And considering how much faster today's processors are, today's memory is, I mean, goodness gracious, a 500 gig hard drive, 4 gigs of RAM for $230. Wow. She didn't say, but I'm guessing that this is a Chromebook, but maybe it is a Windows machine. You would be better off getting a Chromebook at that price point. That is, those are, and I'm pretty sure that's what she's looking at that price point. They're not running Windows. They're running Google's Chrome OS, but that's probably fine. If you're using a web-based email solution and you're doing a lot of surfing, those are the two things she mentioned. That's actually going to be a decent system. The new HP system, if you go to google.com, actually, go to play.google.com, and they list all of the Chromebooks, including under the devices section, including the new HP, the Chromebook 11. This is a pretty nice device for very little money. Oh, they're out of inventory. Of course they are. I don't know why they have so much trouble. Amazon will have them, too. If you go to Amazon and you search for Chromebooks. But this 11-inch HP Chromebook, it was about $250, maybe $279. And a really nice system. The advantage you have with the Chrome OS and a Chromebook is it's very secure. You don't have to worry about hacking or viruses. They just don't exist on that platform. The disadvantage is, you know, you can't play Call of Duty on it. I don't know if that will bother anybody, frankly. So I'm not sure what the Toshiba was, but I would absolutely go to Amazon, search for Chromebooks, get the most recent model. If you can get the HP 11 Chromebook, that's an excellent choice. I think for what you want to do, that's the way to go. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And now, here you go. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. I was looking at this computer that our last caller was talking about. On Amazon, it's $282. I think Best Buy has it for less. The Toshiba Satellite. I don't know how they do this. It is a Windows 8 device with a 15-inch screen. 4 gigs of RAM, 500 gig hard drive. The Celeron in here is a modern Celeron. It's not, I don't understand why they, Intel's naming is bizarre. Why they went back to the Celeron name, it's ancient. It's literally, you know, a last century processor. you might as well call it the Model T. But it has a webcam with microphone, it has a CD. And DVD burner. It has Windows 64-bit Wi-Fi for under $300. That's unbelievable. I don't know how they do it. I doubt it'll last very long. I can't imagine it will. But you know, in that price point, I don't see how you can get any better deal. This is an amazing deal. Snap it up, and hope you have more money next year to buy the next computer. I do have to say I do like the Chromebooks, but this is full Windows. You know, I mean, if you need to run Windows, it may be that for some people, Windows is more than you need. Our caller said, I just surf the web and do a little email. Chromebook would be fine for that. This Intel processor came out at the beginning of the year. Dual core, 1.8 gigahertz. It's got 2 megabytes of cache. I mean, it's a decent processor. It's certainly faster than what she had 5 years ago, even if she spent $1,000 for it. 8888 Ask Leo. It's always amazing to see how low they can go. You can't get, I mean, how can you get lower than $282 or $229 if you shop around? What are you going to get? Unbelievable. Best Buy has no restocking fee, so maybe Zaphod's right. Go to Best Buy, get it for $229. If you don't like it, just bring it back. Jess in Oroville, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jess.
Oh.
Oh, you're on.
Got me off guard here.
Yeah, 2 hours later, he's on.
Yeah. I've been following you guys since Tech TV and Call for Help and Screensavers.
Wow. Back in the days of the Celeron.
Oh, yeah. I'm desperate for some ideas here. I just got an Nexus 5.
Yes.
Okay, and I'm running out of ideas here on how to get my Google Search Now cards working.
The Google Search? Oh, I see. Google Now.
Yes. You know how you swipe to the right with your home screen and you get the Now cards, you swipe, they don't show up on it.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, so you have to sign up for Google Now. You know that, right? You have to.
Absolutely. But now I'll give you some history here. I've got an iPhone. I've got a HTC One, which I moved the SIM over from.
Yeah.
And I've got a couple tablets. They all have Now on it using my Jesterman email account. Okay. They all work.
Yeah.
This phone does not. Now, what I have done is I have another Gmail account, which is just one I have as a spare backup, whatever. And I deleted this account out of the phone, entered the other account in.
Oh, boy.
And it worked.
Oh, boy. So
I'm assuming it's not hardware, and I've already called Google. And
this is a special. I don't know what's going on, but remember, you have to opt in on each individual device.
Yeah,
so when you first sign up on your new Android phone, it'll say, do you have a Google account? You'll say, yes, you'll give it that. So you used the Jesterman account. Is that right?
Yes, yeah. I did. But when I used
And then once it all started up and everything's fine, you swipe over to the right, which is the new thing on KitKat, the new operating system. You're supposed to see Google Now. What did you see?
Well, nothing. It kind of gives me a white flash and then stops. But if I go in with the backup account, I actually get the cards. It works. And if I
are you using Google Apps, or is this a normal plain old Google account?
It's a regular. It's my Gmail, my Google. I have my G+. Okay. Everything Google's tied into it. My wallet, everything.
Yeah, but it's not a Google Apps account. It's a normal Google account.
Yes, it's a normal Google account.
Google Apps accounts, you do have to go into the administrative settings. Somehow Google Now got disabled. What I would do is log on in a desktop computer and go into your dashboard, google.com/dashboard, in that Jesterman account, and look at your settings. And I would guess that what happened is that it's somehow, maybe it did it on its own, I don't know. Or maybe you said, you know, when you first go to Google Now, it says, do you want to go in? Do you want to use this? And you have to say, yes, I'm in, or cancel. And maybe if you cancel, it turns it off. I don't know. So log into your dashboard and see what your settings are for Google Now. Make sure it's turned on. I would guess that's it. Goodness knows, Google wants you to use Google Now. they're making all their money on Google Now, and I love it. You know, I just minutes ago, literally, I was looking for a restaurant and a hotel to go to for Thanksgiving, trying to get away from the family. So I did a Google search on my desktop computer for we were talking to Johnny Jett, right, about this. I did a search. Now my Google Now cards show me the commute time to that place, how long it's going to take me. So now some people might find this a little creepy, right? Google pays attention to what you're searching for and then offers in Google Now. For instance, I've got the weather forecast for our locale. They know I'm a 49ers fan, so it says when the next 49ers game is. It shows stocks I'm interested in, searches I've made recently. But right at the top, it says, hey, it's going to take you an hour to get to that hotel you were looking for about 3 minutes ago. And shows me a map. I can even press a button that says navigate. Now, I think some people would maybe be a little bit bugged by that. I like it. So Jester's in the chat room. So the chat room's trying to help him. I think resetting it probably is the key. Turning it back on. 8888 Ask Leo. Mary in Apple Valley, California. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for hanging on. I appreciate it.
Okay. I have a question about listening to live radio. Like I am through my computer, I'm listening to you.
Yay!
Through my computer.
Yay!
But I wanted to be able to do it on the road, like through some sort of a smartphone.
Yeah, any smartphone could do the same.
Okay.
You're probably using iHeartRadio on your desktop now, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So there's an iHeartRadio app for iPhone and Android. So you could get almost any smartphone, iPhone or Android, and you'd start the iHeartRadio app, download the iHeartRadio application, start it up, and the same stations would be available in your phone. What you want is a car that can play back the audio from your phone if possible. That could be done via Bluetooth if you have a late model vehicle. Older vehicles, you can buy adapters. If you have a cassette deck, for instance, you can get a cassette adapter that plugs into the phone and into your cassette player.
Mm-hmm.
And then the audio from the phone will go through your car speakers. I do that all the time. I love it. There are other applications besides iHeartRadio. There's many, in fact. TuneIn Radio is very popular. People use this all the time. It'll get a different set of stations. What's happened is the radio companies, and we're a premier, this show's premier, so it's on iHeartRadio. CBS Radio has its own application. TuneIn has everybody that's not one of the above. But with those three apps, there's pretty much no station you can't listen to. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo's the number. Jim in Simi Valley, you're next. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm running Windows 7, and at least half the time when I try to use Internet Explorer, I get a message box in the center that says, Internet Explorer has stopped working. A problem caused the program to stop working correctly. Windows will close the program and notify you if a solution is available.
What version, you said Windows 7, what version of Internet Explorer are you using?
10.
Okay. The latest. So, you know, browsers are really on the front line. If you think of technology as a war and the internet as the battle, the browser is the thing on your computer that spends all its time on the front line. That means it goes to websites where anything can happen. People can try to run plugins. Often if you have animation on a page, it's using Flash. You might have PDFs on a page that load Adobe Reader. There might be Java on a page that loads the Java runtime engine. There's so many things that you can run up against on the internet. And sometimes those things will crash the browser. I mean, the good news is the browser crashes, not all of Windows. IE11 is out. That's right. Okay, so one thing you might try is updating to Internet Explorer 11. Do you have automatic updates on your system?
Yes, I do.
I'm surprised you don't have 11 yet. Oh, and it just came out for Windows 7, right? It just came out. Yeah, like this week. So that would be the first thing. It may or may not solve the problem. But run your Windows update, and it may not be a critical update. It probably isn't. It's probably one of those optional updates. But look for IE11. Install that. Here comes Alex, our Windows expert, to tell me. It is... Oh, it's not in the update. It will be eventually. Right now, you have to go to Windows.com and install it from there. I would say that would be the first thing I would do. The next thing I would do, always do the easiest thing first, right? And it's good to have the latest browser. The next thing I would do is blow out all your settings and history and all of that stuff. There may be something in your cache, in your history, that's crashing the browser.
Yeah, I've tried that. I've done that a couple of times.
Okay.
Now, would this have anything to do with if I use Windows Live Movie Maker, that does the same thing.
That crashes too?
Yes.
All right. So now I'm thinking maybe there is a DLL, a dynamic linked library that's damaged that both IE and Windows Live Movie Maker are calling on. All right. So... We're getting some...
The Movie Maker will start, and it'll run for maybe a minute, 2 minutes, and then I get the message that it closed unexpectedly.
Yeah. Well, there are a couple of things you can do. I think the first thing I would do is make sure that all of Windows is intact. Sounds like you may have bad DLLs.
When you click the start menu, do you have a run entry in your start menu? You can turn that off.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
So click start run, and you're going to get a little command line, and you're going to run the system file checker, SFC. SFC, system file checker, space slash scan now, one word. What this does is it runs through all of the Windows files, the ones that are supposed to be installed by Windows, and make sure they're there and make sure that they're intact. In order for this to work, if you do find a problem, you'll need your Windows install disk because it'll pull another version from there. The other thing, if you have a Windows install disk, you can always do is run the Windows install disk, and just before it installs Windows, you'll get a repair option. You can press R to repair. Running a repair on Windows is essentially the same thing. That'll fix any damaged DLLs. It sounds like a damaged system DLL. These are libraries that all of the, many applications share. If you have two applications crashing, that usually means there's a common library that's damaged.
Okay.
So those are a few things to try. We have a reset, a much more elaborate reset for Internet Explorer we can put in the chat room. Or rather, from the chat room we can put in the show notes at techguylabs.com. I invite people to go to techguylabs.com and add their thoughts. There's lots of different ways, kind of step by step to go through this.
I appreciate it.
Hey, you're welcome. Another good one that people often recommend is CCleaner from Piriform, P-I-R-I-F-O-R-M. You can run that, and sometimes that'll find it'll clear out temp files, cache files. Sometimes that'll find a problem. It could be that there's a plugin that's damaged, that's crashing. That's why I mentioned Java, Flash, and Adobe Reader. All three are sometimes launched by your browser, and if they're not loading properly, they can crash your browser. Because the browser does so much on the Internet, it's handling so many different data types, it is often... It's out there on the front lines, the first one to fall. And then some in the chat room saying, yeah, just you should format the drive and reinstall Windows. If all else fails, that's always a good fix. But I would do the updates. Now that IE 11 is available for Windows 7, just came out, that's probably worth trying. Just came out for System 7. It's been out for Windows 8 since it came out a year ago, isn't it? Close to. Lee in Spring Hill, Florida. Hi, Lee. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Did I push the right button? No, I didn't. Hi, Lee. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing today, Eric?
I'm well.
Guy, I think in North Dakota about cell phones.
Yeah, he was, he was limited to AT&T and Verizon there, and he was just thinking about making a change.
I don't know why more people don't use prepaid plans. They work great. They're cheap, and you get a lot for them. I pay under $40 a month, and I get unlimited talk, text, and I get some data. It's a great deal.
Yeah, it's the people who want a lot of data that usually, they want certain smartphones, B, they want a lot of data, so they end up doing the on-contract plans. But you're right. Off contract for a lot of people is a much better choice, and you can go to Walmart. A lot of places you can go and get Straight Talk and some of these other packages that are pay as you go, no contract. But generally, they'll have either low speed or limits on the number of how much data you can download, and they'll have limitations on the phones you can use. So that's the issue. And most of our listeners are using their phone as their computer, basically.
That's very common these days.
Yeah.
For those people. They
yeah,
want.
Well, you pay the price, don't you? Yeah.
You pay the price.
You pay the price. Good tip. That's right, Lee. We don't mention the prepaids often, and we should. That's often the best way to do. Yeah.
There's a lot of them, like you say. There's like H2O, Page Plus, Straight Talk, a whole bunch of them. They're easy to use. So thanks.
Hey, I appreciate the tip. You're absolutely right. Jay in Providence, North Carolina. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, I'm thinking about finding a website builder to put something together where people could buy and sell used cars and search in rather great detail for the type of car. And I'm wondering what type of language, like web development language, that I should look for the prospective builders to tell me they're going to use.
Do you have a website already?
No.
No host at all?
Nothing at all.
Yeah, I would. So what you're talking about is a database application because all of the data has to be stored on the server side and they can search into it, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I would say that you should first look at Squarespace.com because they do the hosting and the software. You might also look at, well, so what you're going to, you can roll your own, which means you have to find a host. And then on top of that, it's not a website builder. You're going to be using a content management system that has a database backend. It gets a little complicated. Why don't you try Squarespace? It's free for the first 2 weeks anyway. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Star Dick DiBartolo, Mad's maddest writer. He's with us right now.
Yes, sir, I am.
Dick is also our gadget guru. He comes up with the strangest gadgets and joins us every week to talk about.
Yes, well, you know what? We did this on the GizWiz, and since that time, I thought, I'm going to do a little more research. It is the snake light. The first snake light, I found out, was in 1994.
The idea of a bendable, like, gooseneck flashlight, basically.
Exactly. Right? You bend around, you're working under the sink, you bend it around the pipes. You're working under your desk, bend it around the leg of the desk. Or the fuses go out, just bend it around your neck and point it toward the job at hand.
Really? That sounds dangerous.
I thought they had just given up on it. And then because they just sent me the newest, it's just Amazon has it, but it says out of stock, mainly because it probably has not arrived yet. So it's Snake Light Black & Decker rechargeable.
Ooh.
So it has lithium ion. You charge it overnight. You get 5 hours of burn time from it. But going through eBay and Amazon, there were dozens of versions of this. The original had, I believe, 2C batteries and a flashlight bulb in the end of it.
Well, that makes sense. But now we're LEDs and lithium ion rechargeables.
Yeah, 10 LEDs, yeah. Lithium rechargeable. You can bend it into any shape. You can sort of bend the base so that it just stands up if you want some light in a tent. It's not horrendously bright. It's 44 lumens. But the thing is, you tend not to be using this so much as a flashlight as a task light. So it would be close to where you want to be. But you and I, Leo, know that for a gadget in any form to almost make it, I guess it will make it to 20 years.
It must work. It must do something.
Yeah, it must do something. It must do something.
On the Black & Decker site, they have a picture of a guy wearing it around his neck.
There you go. There you go. And not gagging at all.
No. I wonder, nowadays in today's litigious society, they must have in the manual some sort of verbiage that says something like, do not attempt to tighten the snake light around your neck.
You know what? It wouldn't surprise me because in the next 2 weeks, I'm going to do something from Black & Decker, a leaf blower, leaf mulcher. Leo, there must be 35 warnings, cautions, danger before you get to plug it in and use it.
Right.
No, it's like 35. This is very complicated.
Do not attempt.
Yes. These are 34 pages of warnings. Yes.
Do not attempt to mulch your little sister.
Yes. That's right. Yes. Yeah. Do not attempt to use this on leaves. We recommend you don't use this in the fall.
Don't use it at all. In fact, for safety's sake, pack it up and send it back.
Yes. I once did a thing for Mad Magazine about, companies that don't want to get sued. Do not attempt to sit on the seat of this bicycle and balance yourself on the two wheels. Anyway, Black & Decker, rechargeable lithium snake light, and it's going to be model BCF4SL. It should be out later this month.
$30, it says on the Black & Decker
bucks,
site, which
exactly.
is a good price. Now, we see it for much more on Amazon, so I think
I think some people sort of buy the first few and figure they hope you'll never find out that the list is only 30 and we can get 40.
Sucker.
Yeah, exactly. It is amazing sometimes if you look up something on Amazon and there'll be someone there selling it for $200.
Yeah.
A $30 item. And I guess they figure if he lands on me first.
It's not just
this is the price.
It's not just them. It's even, well, for instance, this Nexus 5 phone, which Google sells for $350 on this Google site, $700 if you go to buy it from Best Buy. There's
really?
No. Yes. And I totally think that that's just like, well, we hope nobody finds out.
I think you're right.
That's crazy. Right. Yeah. Crazy talk. All right, Dick, stick around. The Giz Fizz coming up right after the radio show on twit.tv, featuring that guy right there. If you want to visit his website, it's gizwiz.biz, and there's a brand new What the Heck Is It contest there. The previous, by the way, this is a Squarespace site, if anybody wants to know. That's why we could send everybody there all at once. The previous What the Heck Is It game, I didn't know what it was. It looked like kind of a duck-billed backup light or something like that. It was a Pringles carrying case.
Yeah. And speaking of Amazon, I don't think they make it more. And there are a ton of people on Amazon that want $10 for a used one.
A used Pringles snack container.
Yeah. It's Pringles-shaped. And the object is you can take about 20 Pringles, put it in there, snap the case closed, and when you get to work, you can have unbroken Pringles.
Apparently, there are people in the world who really feel that a Pringle that is broken is no Pringle at all.
No.
The perfect. But yes, if you eat Pringles, it's because you want perfect potato chips, right?
Yeah, that's the whole.
Those ones made out of real potatoes, they're so strange shaped. What is that strange shape that it looks like a potato?
I need something uniform for my mouth.
I want exact, precise uniformity. And I'm going to buy a $10 container to keep it from being broken in my lunch bag. So anyway, there's a new one. That was the old one. Your chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. You have until the end of the year to do this one.
The end of the year, yeah. Yep. You'll be playing for the February issue of Mad.
All right. Hey, thank you, Dickie D. Stick around.
Yes, sir.
The Giz Fizz coming up. I'll take a couple more calls before we wrap the show up. Tim, Corona, California. You might be the last call of the day. I think you are. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Tim.
Hello, Leo.
Hey, sorry to keep you on hold so long.
Oh, that's perfectly okay. I don't know if this is something that you might be able to give me some guidance in. I invested in a startup company in Arizona. I was an MIT physicist who teaches at Embry-Riddle College in Prescott, Arizona, came up with a process that makes any information between any two computers completely unhackable. And he got a retired guy from Microsoft who retired at 32, knows Bill Gates personally, to write it and develop it and get it done. And after that, they went to the Air Force. The Air Force gave them a one-year contract to prove it to them. And they said, we'll give you $1 million. And they actually gave them $1 million, and they proved it to the Air Force. And the Air Force gave them...
We're running out of time. What's the name of the company?
SoftCrypt. With a K-R-Y-P-T.
I'll check it out. Let you know next time. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.